Matt Cohn spent years in the what he calls the unconscious business world, helping large banks implement online banking services. In the mid-2000s, he began a search for more meaningful work and joined the management team of Foundation Source, a provider of support services for family philanthropy. Working with many of the top philanthropic Northwest families, Matt developed a passion for social impact investing projects and formed KarmaVentures.org, an NGO providing educational support for schools in Nepal and Honduras. For the past few years, Matt has helped organizations become certified benefit corporations, including the formation of Beneficial Ventures. I've gotten to know Matt over the past few months, and I know he's an avid traveler. He loves the wind. He loves to explore our world. And he's definitely an individual who is very, very interesting to speak with. And this is why I invited Matt to come and talk about his ideas about abundance mindset and conscious business and a few other things we get to into this podcast. So here's Matt. Enjoy. Welcome to the Unhustle Podcast, the only place on the internet showing you a radically different way to think, be, live, and work in a culture addicted to doing. At Unhustle, we rebel against the toxic hustle culture mentality and reclaim our life, well-being, and fulfillment, creating a relaxed and sustainable success with alignment, harmony, and joy. Thanks for pressing play.
Hi, Matt.
Hello.
Thank you for taking the long roads to come and meet with me and talk about abundance and higher consciousness, conscious capitalism, and whatever else we go into today. So you've developed an abundance mindset theory. Why did you do that, and what does it stand for?
I can't say I developed it. It's kind of like when you're in Nepal and a dog adopts you and you're adopted by a dog and you don't necessarily want a dog, but it kind of follows you around and then eventually you kind of fall in love with it. So that's how this model for abundance kind of just started to show up in my life and started to show up in meditation. And along the way, I became enamored with it. And now it's just part of me, just follows me around. So
can you explain what the abundance model is?
Yeah, well, kind of like specifically the abundance model that talked about on the website and did a podcast or a TED talk about is kind of like a financial diet. So you go to a dietitian and they give you a prescription, this many calories of this many from fat and proteins and various things. And this model is many people live in scarcity mindset. Most people do. But they want to get to a place of abundance mindset. And so practicing this sort of model, this financial diet, starts to train the mind around moving towards abundance and away from scarcity. So that's what specifically what it is. So, I mean, I can give you the details.
Let's go into the details.
The elevator pitch of abundance model, to get from scarcity to abundance, most Western minds say, well, you got to go make more money. If I can get my cup to be overflowing, well, I got to go out and get more money to overflow my cup. So how can I get bigger inflows? The problem is for most people, that's just chasing the tail. You never quite get there because the more that you bring in, your cup starts getting bigger. And if you're in a paycheck to paycheck mindset and you get a bigger paycheck, then you have bigger expenses. And so how do you really shift that? The abundance model says the only way to get to abundance is to declare it right now and to start flowing an overflowing cup. So that typically means start flowing out to other places, and it's painful for 6 months. So the abundance model calls for 30% of the income to be flowing to other sources in three equal buckets of 10% called people, causes, and magic. Leave 70% of the inflows for myself. Now, most people think that's crazy. I'm going to take a 30% haircut and distribute that to other people when I'm basically living paycheck to paycheck. But it's kind of magical what happens in practicing flowing resources to people, causes, and magic. At first, it's a little bit painful, but ultimately more resources start to flow in to both naturally fill my own cup and then start filling these shot glasses, these little cups on the outside. Briefly, people, causes, and magic. People is being open, aware of people that show up in your life that are working to improve themselves, progress, whatever you may call it, and we can help them help themselves. So kind of teaching people to fish rather than giving them fish. Causes is traditional causes. Whatever it is that floats your boat, what are you personally passionate about on the planet? Whether that's sea lions, whether that's kids' art, whatever it may be. But it's a cause that you get passionate about and you apply your own thinking and resources and creativity to, and as well as financial resources. Magic is the kicker. Magic is intentional, creative, random, anonymous acts of giving, almost artistic. So walking into a restaurant, picking the wealthiest people you can see, paying for the meal, leaving before they can see you, and knowing that you just put karma into the universe, that that person you just paid for meal gets disturbed by who would be generous to me, and that goes into the office the next day and starts giving people raises or something. So those people cause the magic. So practices in 6 months, you'll start to see inflows start dramatically increasing.
And so you've tested this personally with other people? What?
Yeah. Absolutely. Mostly myself. And it actually gets to be a burden, because as you start to meet quota from source and doing this, then source says, well, you're an efficient way of distributing resources, and they start pouring more onto you. And the 70-30 starts to go to 60-40 or 50-50 because you can't handle the resources that are coming into your own cup. Yeah. In truth, I've probably worked with 30 people and who were intrigued by the idea, and 5 have gone hook, line, and sinker and would be advocates as much as I am for this model. So
give me some. You've seen it work.
Yeah. But it's not for the faint of heart. Going through and distributing 30% of income when you feel like you're in scarcity mindset is painful.
Okay, so we're gonna take a step back or two. To how you left, tell me a story about how you left the unconscious business in pursuit of more meaningful work.
I mean, I did a startup in 99, 2000, and we were playing the game perfectly, and it was exciting and fun, and then it got to be really hard work, and I basically wasn't having any fun. And I ate a pot cookie by mistake one night and spent all night talking to my wife that I wasn't really enjoying what I was doing. And the following week, we missed our numbers. One of us had to get laid off. I rose my hand, and then somebody asked to buy our house. And we found ourselves in a motorhome in Europe with our 2 kids homeschooling them. So it was all because of a pot cookie. I mean, I don't know. I've been fortunate. I've usually just done whatever I really wanted to do in life. And I enjoyed playing the game for a long time. I enjoyed the hustle. It was fun, you know, and I was good at it. Then eventually it just got to be, for me, more boring than taxing. It was just like, yeah, now what? I've done all this. And so life opened up a bunch of new doors to go do things. I can't say I was really searching for meaning. I was searching for gratification, which is what humans do. And the gratification of the game just got to be redundant. I mean, you have a sure way of winning it, then what fun is it? So there's other doors opened up.
So what does your day look like these days?
I get up at 4:35. I go meditate for a couple hours. During meditation, I'm given all these little assignments. Do this, do that, you know, my work. Go check in and log in. Usually there's 10 or 15 people that want something from me. Get that done in a couple of hours. And then play outside in nature. And I've been really good at shifting, not taking on any of that stuff during my day. So I let things batch up and work on them in a batch-oriented way. And then I'm in bed by, meditate for another hour at night, and bed by 10.
Sounds like a pretty perfect life. And the more I talk to people about what success looks like, the more I realize that there's a lot of people who are very successful who don't want to be found online.
Don't get found online?
They don't, yeah, they would like, would rather not have much of a success from a perspective of being known. They want to be less known.
Yeah, there's, I think in the first half of life, my role was to be known. I did a lot of evangelizing in industries and public relations and blah. And then And later on, you do want to be more the person behind the curtain. I've often joked that this is a multi-level karma scheme. And the more that you can have other people do inspiring works and you can help them, you almost get a royalty off of that. And less about me doing the work, and the less you're more in back in the scenes, you collect these karmic royalties and see other people be successful.
Let's say you got out of the whole work 9 to 5 or 9 to 9 scheme. At what point did you develop or think about this abundance mindset? Because there's a lot of people who have the fear of leaving their paycheck to start something more meaningful or more fulfilling, but then there's the financial fear of how would I make money again? Would I make the same amount of money?
I mean, the abundance model came to me as more of an explanation of what I've always done, which is basically just do what I want and then see how the universe organizes around that to fulfill it. So I pretty much have just was born that way. I don't know, I just came into this existence and have practiced that. And so the abundance model was given to me in a long meditation retreat by some voices in the head that said, you know, here's a way of explaining how people want to move from scarcity to abundance, and here's a way to talk to them about it. And it resonated. So, you know, at the same time that came about, my wife and I had separated, my kids went off to college, and I was no longer providing for other people. So for me, People Causes Magic was kind of like 3 adopted children that took over from the wife and 2 kids that I had. So it was quite natural for me to just kind of shift from family to flowing resources to these adopted children.
Hmm. So in that context, how do you think the abundance mindset influences relationships, collaborations, and teamwork in various contexts such as work, family, and community?
I mean, when we're in scarcity, we get scarcity. You know, when you're in abundance, you produce abundance. So it's a mindset. I love the analogy of generosity is I have a closet with 10 jackets in it, and you walk by, you're cold. I go give one of you one of my jackets. Now I have a closet that can hold 10 jackets, but now there's 9 in it. Still a lot of jackets, but I have less than capacity. Abundance is I have a closet that holds 7 jackets, and I've got 3 jackets on the floor. That's annoying me because I don't have a place for it. You walk by, you're cold. There's this visceral feeling, both it feels good to give it to you, but you're doing me a favor. This is like serving me by you taking this from me. Mm-hmm. And you can apply that to anything, to love. You can apply that to financial resources. You can apply that to possessions around the house and so forth. There's when we're in abundance, we have more than we need. And then there's a feeling of this puzzle piece doesn't belong to me. It belongs over there. And it feels good to find the rightful place for things.
So how would somebody, on a practical level, in your 6-month period, actually go down that path?
The easiest way to do it, my former career was online banking. So if you have an online bank account, you could create 3 separate accounts with that bank. So 3, call it savings accounts. You call the first one your primary account, that's you. And then you have, and your bank supports it, you name the other accounts, People Causes Magic. Every time there's an inflow to the primary account, $1,000 comes in. You do a transfer of 10% to People Causes and Magic. And they start to accrue resources. And you start to have this feeling of you're a steward of those resources. They're not yours. So part of your job of life is to look after these resources and find the appropriate places for them to flow. And then as they, you know, $1,000 starts to get there, $1,500 get there, you'll get a knock from the door from a friend saying, hey, I'm trying to go to India to become a yoga teacher. And I've raised $4,000 and I need 5. And you're like, oh, well, that's where this goes. There's no, it's no pain in giving it to them. It's all, oh, that's where this goes. Oh, it's kind of exciting. You find the rightful places for these things. The magic one is fun and challenging. It's an example I used earlier, walking to a restaurant and just pay for people. But it reinforces your abundance that you just will do things and you get no gratification immediately. I've had some crazy experiences in this where later that day, people that I just had met will tell me, oh, you know, somebody picked up my dinner tab last night. That was me, but I can't tell them that. So the universe has a fun way of reinforcing it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. So that's the most practical way, is to start doing it. And it also is a little helpful at first if you flow into these buckets, that if you all call this all BS at the end and don't want to do it, well, then you can just move money back in. Right? Mm-hmm. But you start to live off of your primary account and you have these placeholders from those monies flowing into.
So is there a connection between abundance mindset and conscious capitalism?
Absolutely. Yeah, the way I see conscious capitalism is it's a pyramid or a triangle. There's three seats at the table. There's investors, employees, and the beneficiary of the business. So you could call it the cause. So the responsibility of management of that company is to maximize the interest of all three stakeholders. So to give a fair and reasonable return to investors, to overpay employees relative to the market, and to benefit whatever the cause is. Say, like Patagonia's example to the Patagonia region. Investors get a dual return because they both get a financial return, but they also get a philanthropic return. So that they know their money is being used towards something that they feel passionate about. Patagonia reason. Employees are stoked because they're working at a company with passion, but they're also getting to drive nice cars and send their kids to good schools and stuff because their company is thriving. And this interesting feedback loop happens. The cause starts to bring new business to the table as well. So other people that are interested in that cause will start to buy products from that company. It starts to feed the company and it starts to spiral. And it's not being done for altruistic reasons. This is being done to be successful. In my true belief, when these things are done well, they far outperform traditional bilateral exchange companies, customer and investor. Yeah. Still early on in a lot of these companies, once they get successful, they're getting bought up by old guard. But it's changing. It has to.
So do you think there is a shift in consciousness with the, following the pandemic and more businesses and people are looking for?
I mean, I like to think about this one. It's not a shift in consciousness. It's some, like a conscious shift in consciousness. This model just works and it feels better. It feels better to go to a company to make more money. That's your measure of success. And at the same time, being doing cool stuff in the world. Mm-hmm. You have a better conversation at cocktail parties than if you're in there a rape and pillage company and you made a bunch of money and it just doesn't feel as good. And if you're in a company that is just magic is supporting it, mm-hmm. it's magical. And these companies truly have that kind of energy about them. They're in sync with flow, if you will.
Mm-hmm.
Right. So you can label it afterwards that there's a shift in consciousness. It's almost kind of the experience starts to turn things online. The success of the company, all of a sudden people are, oh, wow, this mind blowing. This thing works. It's not like my consciousness shift and then I would apply that to this. It feels almost like the whole system kind of works on you and opens you.
So what would be some of the obstacles or challenges that somebody would have to not go in that direction?
Scarcity, fear, a traditional mindset. Traditional business models, maximizing for shareholder benefit. It was just the 1900s, 1800s mindset. And this is kind of been, the thing is, this does maximize value for shareholders because they get return, but they also start to get a philanthropic return. So it's a greater feeding system for investors as well.
And there could be also a bigger impact to social and environmental issues from that.
Yeah, I think it's just basically more fun and feels better. A lot of them can get applied to social issues, but it's like social canvas. This is a cool way thing to be painting right here. And it works well. So
if you have a magic wand and you could do anything you want in the world, what would you do?
Sit here and talk to you. Because I do have a magic wand. That's what I'm doing.
Well, thank you. Can you think of some organizations that are following the conscious capitalism model?
The classic example is Patagonia. Right?
Yeah.
Patagonia has the mission to benefit the Patagonia region. They build products. They're, the old model, I spent a lot of time in this model of nonprofit and for-profit. Almost makes me sick. The whole notion, I hate the word nonprofit. It's like non-generative. It's like, we refuse to thrive.
Right.
And it's kind of a karmic offsetting or whitewashing for those that have karmically sinned.
Mm-hmm.
You've karmically sinned. We'll take your money and we'll offset that for you. These companies are like, no, we don't need donations. We're a thriving company. We can generate our own resources and we'll apply those to a specific cause. And it's just so much a better feeling than making people feel guilty that they made a bunch of money and then asking them for their money to go do work because they don't have enough time to go do it.
Mm-hmm.
That's the traditional nonprofit world in my mind.
Yeah.
Right. So
what's,
did that answer the question? Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah. So what's going on in your life like 6 months?
Went to Egypt to go kiteboarding on a yacht for 10
Sounds
days.
Pretty fabulous.
I'm going to go. I studied for a long time King Solomon and the Egyptian stuff. So I'm going to go see his stuff in Cairo. And then I'm going to teach paragliding at a ranch in the summer for June and then probably go to the river some more kiteboarding. And then in the fall, historically, I take a group of 15, 20 people to Nepal and do some community service work and trekking and flying.
And do you have any work or play commitments in this time, or are you unplugged from
the I have to go work at the paragliding school in some weeks that they need me.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't have any traditional obligations in this world.
Yeah. Okay. Because yeah. I know you work about 20 minutes a day.
Well, depends on what you define as work, right? The day goes by and it seems to be full, that there's more relationships that I'm continuing to nurture and support and things like that. And some of those are people doing business work.
Yeah.
You're, you know, plugging in with them and sharing ideas.
Yeah, I think you're one of the very few guys I know, or humans I know, who smirks at the 4-hour work week because it's too much work.
Yeah. Yeah, I think I told you once, somebody recommended I read it, and I go, why would I want to double my work week?
Yeah. Well, thanks, Matt. I know you have a different portfolio of businesses, so where can people connect with you for all your different efforts?
I have a website that's a bookshelf of things that I've done called karmaventures.org. It's more of just a placeholder where I store things, and people can contact me there if they have interest.
Sounds good.
Yeah.
Thank you.
You're welcome.
Thanks for your time.
Thank you so much for tuning into the podcast. I hope you got a lot of value from this show. I know I've enjoyed my conversations with Matt in person, so I wanted to share his wisdom with you as well. Connect with us at unhustle.com, where you can subscribe to the free Unhustle Rebels newsletter, where each week I share strategies, tools, science-based tips, and mind-shifting perspectives so you can design a life that truly matters. If you enjoyed this podcast, please leave a review and share it with a friend. Until next time, stay unhustled.